Right. Well, what are you going to
No.
do? I don't know either. But I do know that we can do a count around.
Two, three, one.
There we
Who's the
go.
best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
I use the bathroom.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the streaming, go direct to DLNTS.org. And ICChallengeLinuxTech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show on the 826, episode 826. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy, happy.
We have Joel.
Good evening.
Flying Rich. Flying Rich. Yeah, Flying Rich somewhere. And Joe.
Hello again.
It's great to hear you, Joe. So I don't know if this went out on the MeWe channel. I think it might have, but I posted in the IRC, which will also be in the notes, the obituary for Donald Greer, 5150.
Yep.
And so in case you haven't seen it, you go over there and post on the wall there. I will say, you know, it kind of like disturbs me a little bit and like surprises me at this. That I didn't know what 5150's like job was. I thought he was like a farmer, and I didn't know, like, I thought that's what his job was. I didn't know he was a private consultant for networking. He does consultancy for computer networking. Like, I thought his, like, actual job was farming, because he'd always say, oh, I can't, you know, I got to watch about this fest or that fest because it's around harvest time. And there was no mention of him doing any farming in his obituary.
Well, he had a decent-sized property.
So depending on where you are, they may consider 500 acres a hobby farm. So, you know, other real farmers may not consider a 500-acre farm a farm.
Okay.
I don't know how many acres. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you other guys owning guns, where I have a gun collection. You might think you have a gun collection, but I do have a gun.
So, did you know that he did consulting for networking?
Well, when we were spooning, that's all.
That's all he's talking about. No, I didn't know. I just thought he was like, because I know he always talked about the farming.
Seriously, I hate to say it.
You cut out.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't know if he, you know, punched a clock, if he was a 9-to-5 guy, or, you know, if he just farmed and, you know, hung out.
Boy, you're cutting out something fierce, man.
Boy, you're bad.
He didn't really talk about his job.
No.
Yeah, and that's why kind of like surprised me, because, you know, I've talked with him, I've met him, I've, you know, he's not just somebody who was on the other side of the screen. You know, I've actually met him and talked with him for a long time, and
long time.
I just didn't know.
Yes, I mean.
Well, and then how many times have you've been on shows with him? You were on not Linux Cranks, but what was the one after that? I can't remember.
Dev Random.
No, the other one.
Colonel Panic.
That's it, Colonel
yeah,
Panic.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll miss him.
Can we start a GoFundMe and
Well,
And what?
I'll fly him there because I could fly as
a GoFundMe.
What the hell are you talking about?
Didn't like every fifth word here.
Yeah, all we heard was GoFundMe, and then you're talking about, and I'll fly him out there. What is else a little uncanny is that 5150 is still in the IRC.
Seriously?
Yes, he's still in the IRC.
Still the machine is on, and it's still logged in.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, now, I don't know if, for a long time after Lord D died, stuff was still being posted to his Facebook by some, I think he had some if scripts that was doing that.
Yeah. That's something.
Kind of creepy.
But
what's kind of odd, though, is it's going to be almost a month that he's been gone, the funeral, when the funeral is. So I don't know. I mean, usually, like in my family, it's been, you know, it's usually a week or so after the person passes when we have the funeral. But I guess.
You know what? You know what, Joel? My dad died in March 26th. We had the funeral in July.
Wow.
Yeah, because that's how long it took to sort all that crap out and get it all situated and everything, and to a point where we could actually have the funeral.
Wow.
So
that's like when my mom died, we had it as soon as we could. You know, within a week.
We did the same thing when my mom died, but that's because like there was nothing we had to sort out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, had everything in his name, right?
So yeah, it just defaulted to him, and he just, you know, we arranged, made all the arrangements and stuff. But, you know, they cremated him pretty much right away, so they just held on to it.
Right. Well, and then it wasn't until 6 months later that we interred her ashes, too. So, I mean...
Hey, don't forget, this Friday, the Linux Lugcast, 8:15 East, well, Central.
Yeah.
That's LinuxLugcast. Wait, what is the URL for that?
LinuxLugcast.com, I think.
Yeah.
Let me double check.
LinuxLugcast.com. Rich, just give up.
His internet's bad tonight.
They got him. So, yeah, it's LinuxLugcast.com. All the information you would need to be able to join up and
cool.
It's the same MeWe.
Yep. The MeWe group too.
Yep.
And they've got that nice tribute wall on a funeral home webpage. I wrote something on there. I think we all should too. So I think a lot of people don't really know. Maybe even his family might not even know all the things that he did and what he really meant to us. So anyway. Microsoft Linux, do you think it's going to be a thing?
Probably.
Yeah, I need to find
his family
the,
might not know what a
story.
Wait, okay, what were you saying? His family might not know what?
What were you saying? His family might not know what? What a warm and good spooner he is.
Yeah, you should put that in his obituary wall. There you go. Good. they got rid of him. You know what? Maybe it's a ghost of 5150 is just like pulling his network cable out. Auto.
There you go.
I'm tethering off.
Got him again.
Starts to talk and then it just like drops.
He says he's tethering off his phone, but evidently probably like Bluetooth tethering.
Bluetooth tethering.
So I didn't read the article. Did you post it in the, somewhere?
I'm working on it.
Okay. Now is this going to be like an official? Well, you know, that's.
I think that right now we really don't know. I think it's mostly a rumor.
Well,
but it's they're doing everything that's going to point in towards that direction.
And we're probably talking something that's like going to be available as an image in Azure. And that's its intended purpose, right?
Well, it could be further though, too, because what motivation does Microsoft have to continue the Windows kernel? Since they're taking
the
care
fact
of,
that you need to learn PowerShell to do the deployments of your application in the Windows environments. I mean, that's one reason right there. You know, So. What I'm thinking is, would you see Linux being what they promote as the consumer operating system, or more towards their server side of things and run their server services on top of it?
I think both. I mean, because they're already running some server services on top of it now. You can already run SQL Server on top of Linux.
Right, so I take it this article is just talking about them putting a skin on top of Linux and letting Linux do all the interaction with the hardware and everything, and them providing the services on top.
Yeah, I mean, I could very easily see them. Hold on.
Okay. I get
stupid freaking article and plays a video when I open up a open the article, a different article, not the first one.
I was gonna say I didn't get a video.
The
but I
next
looked at
link,
it.
The next link I'm gonna paste in there because Microsoft is also hosting the first Windows Subsystem for Linux conference, and they're basically adapting a Linux Fest kind of model for it. And where attendance is free, no charge.
Guys,
give it up, Rich.
Just hook your headset directly up to your phone and use that.
Yeah, if you can.
Instead of tethering.
Because it, but you sound like.
So, just to be clear, though, I don't know because I'm not that familiar and paid attention to Azure at all, but does Microsoft make available a Linux image
in Azure? Yes.
That they kind of maintain, not like Red Hat or.
I see what you're saying.
Like, so you could get like Alpine and Red Hat or CentOS. Or Ubuntu, Debian, like those are just a few of the more like main popular distributions that you would see in corporate environments using inside of cloud services. So I'm wondering, like,
correct.
AWS provides an Ubuntu, like I believe Ubuntu-based image is like their standard default. I'm not sure what Google provides because I never paid attention to that. Since we use our own images.
Right.
But,
now go look at one of the Azure documents I found. It's on their docs.microsoft.com website. There's like a listing of an off... Well, it says offline list of images. So I'm assuming this is just the subset of some of the images that they have. They have CentOS, something called CoreOS... Not sure what that is. Debian, OpenSUSE, Leap, RHEL, Slus, Ubuntu Server.
SUSE.
Yeah.
Forgot about.
So I mean, they
SUSE.
Have a bunch of different Linux images there in the Azure that you could use, but
almost too many.
Yeah.
Well,
how many do you really need? You know, pick one. You know, but
I mean, it's cool that they have all that available. That is,
and I think I forget what the statistic was, but I think isn't Microsoft now donating more code towards the Linux kernel than anybody now?
Well, I don't.
Yeah, I actually did hear something like that. How's the audio now?
That's a lot better.
Much better.
Now, I will say, like, I could see it going like this. If they were to port more services on the server side on top of Linux and start migrating out more of the NT kernel stuff into the Linux space and, like, that taking over there, I think that would ultimately spell the end for the desktop side.
Right.
Isn't that essentially what happened with...
get Windows 32-bit 32-bit and 64-bit binaries to run on top of Linux, and then you got it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, isn't that what happened with Windows was XP, right? Like, up until XP, they had separate... There was NT, and then there was the Windows side kernel thing or whatever, and then they combined the two together. Well, they got rid of the Windows side, just went the NT kernel for the consumer side also. Wasn't that what happened? It was XP, right? Not 2000. Or was it Windows 2000? Were they combined? Were they straight onto the...
XP was NT kernel.
Wasn't 2000 NT kernel too, or was that... Was Windows... Oh, crap, what was it? Windows 95, 98... And
ME.
So wasn't like Windows ME the last Windows? What was that kernel called? Was it just the Windows
DOS
kernel?
DOS was what it was. Windows 95 and 98 were essentially ran on top of DOS. So did ME. The first one that actually used the NT kernel, at least the first consumer level one, was XP. Yeah, but it's an older article. But there's an article I just ran across here. It says Microsoft contributed more code. This is back from 2012. Microsoft contributed more code than Canonical to Linux since the Linux kernel 2.6.32.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that they contributed more than anybody. But back to what I was saying there, Joel. Windows 9X kernel was used in Windows 95, 98, and Millennium.
Okay.
And then NT kernel was used in every version going forward from that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
I didn't know they considered 9X had its own kernel itself. I just thought it just still ran on top of Windows. Or DOS. But, yeah. Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
But, wait, what were you just saying?
That X95 and 98 and ME, those were still running. Out.
Before, like you had said something, and I had said I read what was on the Wikipedia page, but you were making another point, and I forgot what that was.
It must have been important because I did too.
Azure.
Attempt number 17, Flying Rich.
Yeah. Yeah, Linux now, as of September last year, now Linux, there's more Linux hosts in Azure than there are Windows hosts.
Oh, yes. That would make sense, because I know it was kind of like, wasn't it 50-50 a bit there, and then it was like...
Mm-hmm.
But what you were saying was, the kernel contributions. I had the only thing I heard straddled in between that one with where Microsoft was contributing more than Canonical and Microsoft might be the largest one is somewhere in between there. I heard someone complaining. I don't know, it was like, yeah, but they contribute a lot of shit that just gets tossed to the side anyway or something like that. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, and then the best part, though, is now XFAT's going to be able to be included in the Linux kernel without reprisals from Microsoft, since they pretty much said, you guys can have it. So that's good. It's considering that any SD card over a certain size has to use XFAT. Like my 128 gig cards, I'll use XFAT.
But that's because you use it in multiple systems, right?
Well, that's just what the camera formats it at.
The camera. Okay, because I was going to say, you can take an SD card and pop it in your Linux system and format it with, you know, EXT.
Anything I want.
But yeah, you're not going to stick that back in your camera and have it be wrecked.
No.
Or your phone.
No. Yep. Well, and then the other important part too, XFAT will support the larger video files, anything over, you know, because when you start filming 4K video, you get to that 2 gig limit pretty damn fast. So, I mean, you have to run XFAT on a larger cards, otherwise it's just useless. So, I mean, but yeah, I think it's probably going to happen, and what's probably going to happen, at least for most of the Windows people, or, you know, people who, like my dad, my brother, and them, either the Linux version of Windows will just be on their next computer, or they'll upgrade it, you know, if it actually happens. You know, right now it's all speculation. I mean, it's just, but when you look at all the moves that Microsoft is making towards the Linux space, I don't see any reason for them to continue the NT kernel. I mean, because let's face it, it's probably one of the Achilles heels with the Windows systems. So, yeah, who knows?
I almost feel like really out of touch with how the general population uses computers anymore. Because, like, everybody that I come in contact with, I think might have a computer or has a computer, but I never see anybody, like, using a computer anymore. Except maybe, like, out and about, like in a cafe or something like that, mm-hmm. Somebody will be using a laptop to do some work. But I just, like, I feel like mobile devices seem to be the big thing. But obviously people still have laptops and stuff. I mean, I see them at people's house, but I never see, like, a lot of use going on with them. And I wonder, do people still use a lot of the traditional applications, or have they all just moved to web-based versions of something?
Well, yeah, I mean, like my wife and pretty much everyone I know that's not a computer person probably doesn't actually use an actual Windows client. They use a browser to read their email. They use a browser for everything. That's why Chromebooks are doing as well as they are. The new iPad that Apple announced just last week, basically every iPad now from the low cost, if you want to call it low cost, $399 one, all the way up to the top end 12-inch big honkin' iPad Pro can use a keyboard and stylus, every single one of them. As long as it's not an older iPad like the one I have, you can use a keyboard with it as well as the stylus. So small laptops, like if you have a laptop, for some people, like a Surface or something like that, that's what they have. Otherwise, they'll have either an iPad, or they'll have like a some cheap Android tablet, maybe a Kindle Fire or something like that. You know, the most common person that's buying a PC isn't like a person like my mom and my dad, or maybe any of our older family members. Like my father-in-law, he has a computer, but he didn't buy it on his own. My brother-in-law, his son got it for him, and he does use it. He actually has a desktop. I haven't bought a desktop in years.
Now, see, I come to think right now that I have no freaking clue what I'm talking about, because it just dawns on me that, like, every 6 months something happens where I'm like, what? Really? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, like, and this is particularly at work where they're like, well, we need to start doing some Microsoft Team integrations. And I'm like, why? Who uses Microsoft Teams?
A lot of people do.
Who's using Microsoft Teams? Nobody I know is using that. I'm like, well, you got to understand, there's a whole other bigger side of the organization. They're all using Microsoft Teams. It's not just your little group over there running around in Zoom and Slack. And I'm like, well, you know, I guess I do live in a bubble. And I have no idea what I'm talking about, what the rest of the world does. Right, Joe?
We use Slack. Yeah, we use Slack at work.
Happens all the time. You're in your own echo chamber.
Yeah, and I'm just like sitting here thinking, you know, what do I know? Well, how can I say anything about that, about what the rest of the world's doing, all right? Because the people I talk to are doing it. So, but that's, well, yeah.
And I would say probably 70-30 versus Windows versus Mac deployment in my company. A lot of the creatives are going to, and a lot of the marketing folks are going to be using Macs. Most of the people who need to do the work than I do are using a Windows machine because it's just easier to get all the VPNs and stuff to work. Now, fortunately for me now, once I'm making my transition to the new team, I only have to use two different VPNs, AnyConnect and Pulse, because Pulse is what you use to connect to our Amazon cloud servers. So technically, as long as I can get a Mac client, I could use that. Linux is just not even on a table with desktop. For us, anyway. That, and we rely too much on things like SharePoint, we use Confluence.
Now, you say AnyConnect, so they give you a laptop and you take that home and then you hook that into your work system.
We don't have like hosted desktops or anything like that, but I can just connect directly to either our corporate network on the AnyConnect or the Amazon cloud with our Pulse Secure, I think it is. I forget the full name of it.
Right. Because the people I work with on laptops, they have AnyConnect, but I can remote connect into my desktop if I absolutely need to.
Yeah, I don't have a desktop. My desktop is my laptop, so. We use Box to back up, our local data files. I very rarely will write anything outside of my Box folder, so if I'm working on a Word doc or something, it gets written there. For a lot of our documentation, at least in my new team, we're using Confluence.
Yeah!
We have Jira.
Yeah!
That we use for some things, too. Ansible we'll be using for Ansible playbooks.
Slack, of course, Zoom.
Slack, Zoom, VI.
No service now?
Yeah, we have service now. I hate service now. In fact, I think now the one good thing about me moving teams is I don't have to use SAP's Clarity product anymore, I think. All my time will be reported in ServiceNow, but I hate Clarity.
Just a question, Joe. Do you?
Who?
You.
Oh.
So, do your company do any services in the cloud, like AWS or anything like that?
Eventually going to lean that way, and we've kind of got, you know, fingers in everything.
I'm asking for a specific reason.
I'm getting to the answer. Mostly the answer to that question is no, because we do everything internally. Now, we do have our own cloud, but really we're not trying to use anybody else's service.
Okay, so the reason why I ask is because I was just curious, because Joel had said he has two separate VPNs, one for the internal company and one to do AWS. And like where I work, we have one VPN into the internal company, and then from that is where we get our access to, like,
right,
the different cloud services or stuff. It's all kind of tied in with that. And I was just curious if you had. So, Joel, well, go ahead.
If we did that, then yes, that's exactly what we would do. We would have the one machine that we VPN'd into or VPN into the network, and then everything would be accessed that way.
Right. Oh, yeah. Because, like, it's like when I'm working from home and I VPN, it's like I am just like I'm in the internal network and I have access to all that AWS or wherever I want to go. But if I get out of the VPN, I don't get that same level of access.
See, I think the reason why we do that is because we have cases like there's a, if it's a Windows hosted system that's hosted in our section of AWS, then since it's Windows, right now the requirement is that that Windows host in the cloud has to be joined to the client's domain so they can log into it. So we technically have some access to the to their network, but not really. You know, it's just a pipe just for AD for authentication. So I think that's one reason why they do it that way. So not 100% sure of that, you know, I'll be learning all that next week, but you know, that's just how I live my life. And those are the two that I require. And I think I can stack it somewhat and then I can connect to one and then connect to the other. But we don't have, I mean, our desktop is our laptop. Like if you go one into one of our office buildings, most of the cubes are very much like, I'm trying to think, was it Facebook had basically just empty cubes and everyone just picked a cube and sat wherever? That's kind of what it is with us, is you just, you know, plop your laptop down wherever you're at. If you're in our corporate office, and then you can plug in a network cable and go to town. If you need a network cable, most often we just connect to our Wi-Fi.
So then if you were to, if you're connected to corporate network, you want to kind of go into AWS, you have to disconnect and connect with the other one, right? Or can you be in both at the same time?
I think I can be in both at the same time. I haven't tried it yet. All right. Nine times out of ten, I'm not on the corporate one. I'm on the other one, at least when I'm working on cloud stuff. So you know, 90% of my day is on the other one, on the AWS one, since that's where most of my work is. And we use a lot of Okta for...
Yes. I'm very familiar with Okta.
So Okta to connect to most everything that we have, you know, be it Concur, which is our travel system, Navigator, which is basically that's like where all of our stuff happens, you know, so far as performance reviews and stuff like that, you know, which I don't remember what product that is, but that's just what we use. So it's, you know, it's just an amusing amount of different things that we rely on every day. Office 365, that our actual email is hosted through Office 365. So
I think that is the only, so that is like the only thing of Microsoft that I use on a semi-regular basis, mm-hmm, is Microsoft is out.
You ever tried using Office 365 in a Linux browser? It works well, actually.
I have, but I was going to say I only use, and what I use Outlook for is to just highlight all the emails I got that day and permanently delete them. Because it's a bunch of crap. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
status updates, alerts, and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's great.
Or like our company GitHub just started updates. Our company just started something called an ERG, which I think stands for Employee Resource Group. So basically, like, they're starting, like, kind of almost like, well, they don't want to call them clubs, but essentially they kind of are clubs a little bit. Like, for example, there's one for gay pride. There's one for women in tech. Right now, none of them I'm actually interested in joining.
Are they all virtual clubs? I guess they have to be, right?
Yeah.
A lot of
Yeah, usually it's a Slack channel 90% of the time, you know. But they may do things like you may like I assume we could probably create a ham radio one too. But
well, wait a second, that's a good question. Like when you like with your Slack channel, do you guys just create any channel you want?
Sometimes, like I can create a channel, you know. Although if I pick a name that's already in use, I can't use the name that I want to use. Of course,
I mean like our Slack is pretty open. Like there's channels for like different teams and stuff,
right?
And corresponding with different teams. But there's also like Foodstagram where people take pictures of the food that they posted there, and you know, video. There's a video game topic channel and
a possum people talk channel. About,
you know, there's music and other things. You know, people can create, like there's one called the Brown Note that my coworker created, because he's like, oh, I want you all to listen to the music I'm listening to and check this out, because he does a lot of DJing and stuff. So I mean, I was just curious if your company had a policy that you couldn't do that.
Yeah, I think we can. It's also we use and abuse Giphy in Slack.
Uh-huh.
At least the way our Slack is set up, if you type in /Giphy space words, then it'll try and find an animated GIF that fits those words, and then you can hit like a shuffle button so that you don't just send the first one that pick.
You know, that's actually kind of newish. There used to be
it is.
That you would just send it. You'd have to keep sending one until you found the one you liked the most.
The shuffle button makes it a lot easier. Like
yes, it
like,
does.
Like, I was chatting with one of the guys from the transition team today, and I sent him one of the pictures of Lumberg from Office Space, and then he sent me Milton, the stapler. But yeah, it's like I find Slack is the least annoying of the different kind of IM type platforms that I've ever used. We used Skype for a while, and when I first joined, it was what, Office Communicator, I think it was. That was horrible. But at least now you can kind of hide, but people can still send you messages. Like there's one guy on my old team that. He never shows us online, almost never, right? And we still chat on Slack all the time. And the reason is he just wants to hide from the PMs. He just doesn't want to, or because what are some of our other non-technical folks are famous for, especially the PMs. If they need one of us, they'll just Slack us, and it's like. Well, this should be billable, you know. but they do it all the time, and it's like it's too many things. So,
dun, dun, dun.
So you go into hiding.
So to completely change the tone of everything. Evidently, they're doing a Buffy reboot and a live-action Cowboy Bebop. And the only thing that comes to mind is, what is this, 1998?
Why? Well, then there's the Princess Bride, the remake, too, that I heard about, which I thought...
Oh, I hadn't heard of that one yet.
You know, I think I did hear the live-action Cowboy Bebop, and I was kind of like, huh. Is it going to be a series or a movie?
I think it's going to be a series.
I'd rather them take something that a lot of people probably haven't seen ever before and do it. Like, for example, Space Battleship Yamato would be a good one to do live action. I know that Japan did a live action one, and it is good.
I think if you get Cowboy Bebop, the series live action, to do really, really well, you'd be able to see some of those lesser known ones popping up all over the place.
Because in the 70s, when anime was almost unheard of in the United States, that's what, you know, that's what we watched when we were kids. You know, of course they called it Star Blazers in the United States. And then they had a Battle of the Planets That would work because Battle of the Planets is essentially very similar to Power Rangers.
Oh, and another Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Yeah, I heard that too. Although it's supposed to be, I don't know where they're going to go with that.
There's nowhere to go if they're planning on extending it. I mean,
that's what they were planning on doing, is extending it.
Is this all showing up on Netflix?
Good question.
Oh, some of it is. I'm picking up the news from various places.
Some of it my wife was telling me about. I don't know. Cowboy Bebop live. But now I heard it's on Netflix, and I'm like, you know, I really like a lot of the Netflix stuff that they put out, so I'll give it a shot. Although I haven't watched Ultraman yet. And I was
Never mind. I just saw an article on sci-fi.com says, no, that new Battlestar Galactica series from Mr. Robot creator will not be a reboot.
Will not be a reboot? It's going to be a continuation?
That's what it's sounding like.
How?
I know, because it poorly wrapped up the story.
Exactly. Everybody's stuck on Earth in the far distant, you know, there are ancestors, blah, blah, blah.
It says, BSG fans, this will not be a remake of the amazing series Ron Moore launched, because why mess with perfection? Well, I'm sorry. It was very, very, very good, but the end was, I didn't hate the end like some people did, but what was the Cylon's plan is what the thing that we never really figured out in that one. So it says, instead we'll explore a new story within the mythology while staying true to the spirit of Battlestar. So what, you gonna bring back Blood and Chrome?
Or there's gonna be another ship that went through something similar and down a different path?
Maybe the story of the Pegasus? I don't know. Which we know a good chunk of that, but we don't know everything that happened on the Pegasus from the time the colonies fell. I don't know.
The story from the perspective of the Cylons?
Maybe, I don't know. But it's like now it's like when you think about Star Wars now, I mean, we got the last film in the Rey trilogy coming out this December. Does Star Wars live past December, movie-wise? I don't know.
I thought they said they weren't going to be...
They were taking a break.
Doing any more Star Wars for a while.
Yeah, they're going and doing a lot of TV. I mean, there's The Mandalorian, there's a few other TV/streaming shows. And then, of course, The Orville is moving to Hulu. Which means it's not even going to come out as soon as last year's came out. It's going to be late. Because they couldn't have it ready for upfront. Or, you know, another thing that would have been an outstanding live action, either movie or TV series, Macross. That would be freaking awesome.
Yeah, can't complain about Macross. Like I said, if Cowboy Bebop does really well, then you'll start seeing that type of thing.
Yeah, because Hollywood can't do their own thing, you know.
Well, once they see that there's money in that type of thing, you know, everybody's going to jump on it.
Of course. Or freaking remake Buck Rogers again.
Another Flash Gordon reboot.
Yeah.
When was the last Flash Gordon reboot besides...
Oh, what was it? I think it was 10 years ago now. They had the TV show Flash Gordon on the Sci-Fi Channel. It was okay. It wasn't terrible, but I think they only did like one or two seasons.
Oh, wow. I completely missed that, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember I find so
it. If as the, did I because I didn't think thought it was I thought why
if I recall correctly the last like what I remember there was a Flash Gordon way back in the serials in the day. I think maybe there was a cartoon in right. the '70s. Then there was the movie with this Queen soundtrack in the '80s, and then I think in the '90s there was Flash Gordon was brought back with the Phantom and somebody else, and it was like that trio.
Actually,
it was an animation.
There's gonna be yet another Flash Gordon reboot. Another one.
No, because
October 31st last year on Digital Spy, Flash Gordon will return for a new movie reboot.
This was in 2007 to 2008. There was
Yeah, it's coming back.
American Canadian Flash Gordon TV series. Here, I'll post the Wikipedia page for it.
Oh, that was you said 1979?
No, 2007.
The digital spy article has the Flash Gordon I remember, which is the blonde dude with the mullet, you know.
Wait, was that the guy who? No. I was going to say, is that the guy who played Dawson on Dawson's Creek? But I don't know that guy. He's got a forehead like him, though. Is this the one James that was on Vanderbeek. Sci-Fi?
Yeah. At least I think I remember from Sci-Fi. They're saying it was an American-Canadian science fiction television series. Yeah, Sci-Fi in the U.S.
Okay.
Hi, Dan Fry.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, Man Fry. Oh, Man Fry, I got one for you, baby.
Yeah, what's that?
Have you ever, I think I asked you this before. Have you ever worked with Google Spanner?
No, I have not.
All right, so this is great, right? This is a beautiful thing. So we have I think I talked about this past. So I have to back up, like get backups going for our Spanner databases. So we have one, and like this is the goals that we want to achieve in the very near future, like in the next couple of weeks. One is get backups going. Two is to transfer the database from one project to another. And the third is to optimize queries and explore performance enhancing and monitoring tools for it and get those in place a little better. But so I got the backup stuff going, and we had to sort through a whole bunch of different things to get this to work. Because I said part of this process involves transferring the database from one project to another. And it's from, we're moving from a shared project where originally some of this stuff was set up and it was under a group, a project. And so for people who don't know, when you get yourself a cloud services account, you create a project that is what Google calls it, that everything lives under. So Google Storage, Spanner, everything, it's all exists under a project. And so we had a shared project, which a bunch of groups were part of, and we have now our own project, and we want to migrate our stuff out of the shared project into our own. But in order to do backups for Spanner, the way that their backups work currently is that they have a service called Dataflow. And Dataflow is kind of like a back-end service to stuff like Google Storage, Google Spanner, PubSub, Big Table, different services. It allows you to create like pipeline jobs and scripts that you can execute to do stuff between a bunch of different services. And so, for instance, they have to do the backup of the database, they have a cloud template that you run out of data flow that is a spanner to AVR Avro format in Google Storage. So it's just a simple template you're supposed to run that'll take your spanner database and export it to a storage bucket in the Avro format. And then they have another one which allows you to import to do that. So got it working siloed, right? Had a lot of problems trying to figure out how we could just use one project to do everything in the other, you know, to pull it in. But so there's a lot of difficulty in doing that. So we have it going siloed. But the thing is, they didn't want to enable the Dataflow API in the shared project because they were concerned about it being a security issue and a lot of people have access and maybe shouldn't have access. Didn't want anything to happen. They wanted to do this as safely and securely as possible. So they wanted to be able to use data flow in one project to, well, ideally to do it all in this one project and export it into there, but control it into another project. But come to find out, you have to run the data flow services in the same location as a spanner database because there's no way to say, hey, use data flow in this project to export to this storage, but use this spanner database in another project. They don't have that kind of open, but you can do from data flow spanner to a storage bucket in another database, but you have to give the service controller access to that bucket in the other project, which is simple enough. We had to do that. But anyway, get back to the point. I was able to successfully do a backup of the database, development database in production, migrated over to the new, not production, development in our one project, migrated over to the storage bucket in the other project and do a restore into the spanner in that project. Boom. Everything was good. I was like, okay, we're good to go. When we really want to start doing this, got to get everything else in order, transfer this over to get practice for stage, and then stage would go on to production, do that. So we did that today, right? When I did it myself, it took about a half an hour to restore a database. It took 7 minutes to back up. So given all total, less than an hour, right? 3.5 hours later today, we're still fighting with this damn thing, right? And the only difference that we made is we sent the backup from the database and data flow in the one project to the storage bucket in the other. That was the only difference. I mean, right from the get-go, we were having problems with things. Come to find out, to do this to restore, something must have changed, and we can't figure out what it is, but we're starting to get trickles in that Google had made a change to some of their APIs and stuff, and that they were supposed to have an update on Monday, but it hasn't come through yet. But we had to actually pull down a beta version of Google Cloud's API integration utility. It's the Google Cloud SDK, and pull down the beta versions of those stuff just to get the damn restore to work again that worked last week. It was crazy, man. Crazy.
This all happened while you were doing your backup and restore. These new APIs came online. They in a sense deprecated other APIs, and you needed now to use this like a pre-release client in order to get all this through.
So I did a restore last week. It was September 9th. So that would have been 8 days ago was when I did a restore successfully. Backup restore took under an hour. Today, when I did the backup and then I did the restore, it would not work at all. It kept erroring out like this really bizarre network error saying it can't provision the session. And so come to find out, what we had to do was we had to supply one parameter to it, which is subnet, which is not documented at all in any of the things that you look at for the documentation on how to do the restore. Nothing lists this. You go to the gCloud utility, which is the command, this SDK utility that you run. You look through the document, not listed in this. But Google makes available in those gCloud utilities beta and I think maybe alpha builds. And so if you switch over to the beta, you get a whole bunch of other like switches and options that are not really well documented anywhere. But that's what we had to do. We had to set the subnet by using that beta version of the data flow jobs part of that that had that in there to get the restore to run. I didn't have to do that last week. And I even tried to restore the same database, the same copy that I restored last week today, and it wouldn't let me do it. I still had to supply that subnet in there.
Seems to me they should have like a production cloud and a non-production cloud, but I guess they don't, huh?
Well, if you read their documentation and stuff, they talk about how... So when you use a Dataflow template, they're versioned. And they have like releases on a somewhat regular basis of the templates. And they say, you know... Don't use latest, because latest is always to like the alpha. You say if you use late, you shouldn't use latest for production. Latest is mainly for development. Make sure you use one of the stable releases. But what so they did today, what something happened in the past week where it broke production, and I don't know where any of this would be documented. But I'm sorry. Go ahead, Manfred. You were going to say something?
No, I was going to say, like everything that you're talking about sounds very similar to, like, similar offerings that we have through Pivotal. Like, I just posted a link to it there in the chat. Like, Spring Cloud Dataflow basically allows you to do that same type of stuff, the stream processing, the batch processing. You can plug in all of these, like, there's all these, like, ready-made like connector things that you can just kind of drop in, and you're just more or less pointing sinks and sources to the right spots, and it's going grabbing data.
Is that written in Java?
What's that?
Is that written in Java?
I don't think you are limited to Java. A lot of it's all written in Java, but it's this whole backend. Yes, but you're not limited to how the connectors are. I don't believe.
Yeah, when I look at your offerings, it almost looks like. I see a lot of similarity between that and what Google has.
Yeah, that's why I'm almost wondering if it's not this under the hood, you know? There's a lot of like these frameworks that we produce that are used in like all these other companies and whatnot that are all behind. I mean, this is all open source stuff, right? It's all behind the scenes.
Do you have an SQL offering?
What do you mean? Do we have an SQL offering? We have a version of Postgres. We maintain versions of MySQL. They all run on Cloud Foundry, you more or less when you lay down a foundation, you get MySQL for basically for nothing with it. You get Postgres, I believe, as well. There's other bolt-ons like if you want like a pay for version of Crunch or of a Postgres, you can get like CrunchyDB, you know, and other versions like that.
Yeah, I was looking to see if there was a almost like I look at Dataflow, and that looks like it sounds just like Google Dataflow. I was wondering if there's like a spanner match, like almost one to one match there.
There might be. I don't know enough about this product that we have here. But I know that it's for all these enterprise integration types of scenarios that you would run into.
Good times. Good stuff, huh?
Hell yeah.
I'm getting excited for the Pixel 4 launch because I'm probably going to get one.
Is it running on the Spring by Pivotal Network?
Probably the back end.
How much is a Pixel 4 running?
I don't know. The threes were what, $679 for the, and then the three XLs were $100 more than that last year, right, Joel?
Something like that, yeah. I know the Autumn ANHEM. I'm trying to figure out. I think this guy's from Thailand. I think, but he had like a video. The leaks have been really bad with the 4XL. It's really the worst kept secret ever. 6.23 inch screen, Running at 3040 by 1440, Snapdragon 855, 6 gigs of RAM. It's supposed to support astrophotography, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's for like nighttime shots and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Enhanced night sight camera, which, you know, the Google already had a good night sight camera in their camera app. So
there's a whole lot that's going to come out on the 15th. Right.
Oh yeah. And yeah.
Don't, Joel. If I were to recommend, don't buy it right then. Wait till freaking Black Friday when they're gonna probably throw in like a Nest Home Hub for nothing.
Yeah, I don't need another Nest Home Hub. I need a I would, but my phone's on its last legs.
No, but this would be the new one that just came out this week with the camera and the better sound system and all that stuff, right? If it's not going to be that, it's at least going to be the new Nest Minis or, you know, whatever's going to come with it, you know?
Now, the thing that I'm liking about the new Nest Minis, which those are buys anyway at any price, but they actually have a hook in the back so you can hang it on the wall, which is kind of what I've done with two of mine. The one I have in my office, I 3D printed a bracket in the bracket's designed so it kind of goes around the USB connection on the bottom of it. So it screws into the wall, holds up the speaker onto the wall. I did that also with the one in the bedroom as well.
Yeah, I got a number of them that I've mounted up there as well. Like my Google Wi-Fi pods, they are mounted. Most of them are mounted. Some are just like into the plug itself, and some are like up high on the wall.
Now I want to get a Nest doorbell. I'll wait for a new one of that. That's fine.
So check this out. My brother, his Wi-Fi router was like, he had an Asus one. Is like they couldn't stream anything anymore. Like it would get like really, really hot to the touch. So I'm like, oh, get a Google Wi-Fi. But if you can, wait a few weeks. So he got it last week and I went over to his house on the weekend, set it all up for him. And don't they start freaking leaking to the FCC now, like all like the new Nest Wi-Fi and the Google Wi-Fi refurb models are down to like $179 for the 3-pack compared to the $260 I would say it is. I wish he would have waited a week.
Well, the rumor has it that the new ones are supposed to have built-in
Google Assistant.
With the assistant. Yeah,
that'll be cool. Isn't that available already, like on like the Nest Secure, which is like the alarm system? It's just not on by default. You kind of have to go in and enable it or something.
Good question. I don't know.
I remember seeing stories about that a while back.
But I know, like, now I have Lightify for my lights, which they switched Sylvania switched protocols on me, so the bulbs all work on one app, and the switch that I installed in the hall works on another app.
Which sucks.
Well, and neither of them can I, like, the switch will turn on and off. Like, I can turn it on and off with the assistant, but I can't have it connect up to the motion detector, which is in the other app, which sucks.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why they do this stuff.
I'm hopeful that things like Thread become more prevalent across these different product categories. And my thought is that they will work more seamlessly together over this open protocol and whatnot. Like, for instance, like all my, like, I know my Hue Hub is not a Thread device, right? But if I start putting more Thread devices in, so like that, if I get a Nest Home Max, but the Secure is a Thread, like these things are all running on Thread, you know, on the back end right now. And so say my Hue Hub gets a Thread listener or something like that in there, that should be more seamless integration, if you ask me. I don't know. I might be thinking about this too simplistically, but that's my thought with it, that something like that, some kind of open protocol like that, that spans all these things would be a good way to go to start kind of integrating these things in a better fashion.
Sorry, I'm back.
Yeah, we haven't talked since you
I didn't think
away.
So.
It's been quiet the whole time.
I knew it. Now, I heard Manfry was just finishing up a comment.
Now, I like the app, the Switch that I bought, which is also Sylvania branded and installed. I like that a lot better than the light bulbs. And in more of the places in the house, I might start replacing some of the switches. The only problem is it's not really a good fit in places where you have like gang plates. So if you have like three switches in a gang, I don't think it'll fit in in that kind of a situation.
Does it cut out the what kind of cutout is in there?
It's is
it a standard light switch or is it like the rocker?
The old school toggle.
I gotcha.
Yeah, not the Decora.
I've seen at Lowe's like you can actually mix and match those plates. There's a thing that has they actually sell plates that have like tongue and grooves in them. So you can if you needed to say switch out for different types of light switches inside of there. You could do that. So if you could find one that matches, if you said it's just the old school, you know, toggle, then you should be able to go and replace that with one that is with whatever switch you're putting in there with the right type of connector on the outside of it.
Or I could just get another switch to replace the old toggle. Then I might be able to put, because, for example, like in the bathroom, I don't necessarily want the fan on, you know, with a smart switch, but I'd love it if the lights were on a smart switch. You know, so the fan doesn't need to be on one. So but the problem is how the Smart Plus switch is designed. But I mean, putting them in is really easy. I mean, it's, you know, I would do it again for sure in a lot of places. But like the plates that I got, like going from for the entryway light, I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if it'll fit in there. I'll have to look at it again, because the plate that came with the one switch I did install in the hall, it looks like it would look fine with a regular Decora plate, but I don't think the regular Decora, I think is how you say it, which is basically just one for the switches that are mostly flat, you know, with the two raised ends on it. It would look fine, but the one that it came with also looks okay too, and it's also a little bit thicker and a little bit different. So I don't know if, you know, I don't know if it will work in a situation with a gang plate where the gang plate's needed. It could. Gotcha. But I just haven't tried it yet. Because most of the situations with my lights I'm pretty happy with, except for the hall light, which we replaced the fixture last year. And unfortunately, the fixture has the LEDs built right into the fixture. So there's no bulb to switch. So. But the wireless way of doing it with both the Philips bulbs and the bulbs like the Lightify ones and some of the other Wi-Fi ones, that is the way to do home automation. I mean, I remember playing around with X10 in the past, and that never worked. It never worked right. This stuff, you know, it either works and works well, or it doesn't work, and all you have to do is maybe flip the switch on and off, then it works again. You know, it's pretty reliable. And yeah, it's one of those things where I'd love it, you know, if I had a little bit more control on it, and I probably could if I switched to something else, but I don't mind it because at least it integrates with the Google Home Assistant, and, you know, if I could just shout it at Google and tell them turn my lights off, that works for me.
I want more control over like the routines for these things too, like so that they're all just in one spot, not spanned across all these apps, kind of like what you're talking about with your switches and bulbs.
Yep, agreed with that. It'd be nice if it was
standard. I guess that's the notion behind like the so they got rid of the works with Nest program and replaced it with the works with Google Assistant program, right? Which I think would provide more integration into like those routines across these disparate, you know, ecosystems.
Now, like in my kitchen, I have a couple of these SwitchMate Bluetooth. Basically, it goes over the existing switch. It's horrible. I bought them because they were dirt cheap, so. But it does work.
You get what you pay for.
That's true. That's true. I think I maybe paid $15 for them, so they weren't expensive. So I think especially the one in the kitchen for the overheads, I'm probably going to put the Smart Plus switch will work there, so I can probably put that in there because that particular light is just one switch on the wall. It's not a gang on that one. The one over the sink though. That one is in a gang situation where there's a switch. I'm trying to remember if that's all switches there, or if it's a switch in a socket. I don't know. But I made more beef jerky in my air fryer too this week.
How'd that turn out?
Love that. Oh, good, good. Well, I'm learning. It wasn't as good as the first batch, so I think next time I go to do it, I'm just going to buy a big hunk of round steak. I found these eye round, very thin slices, and it worked, but they were a little bit drier than usual. So I think I'm going to just get the big hunk of steak when I use steak to do it, if I use steak. I may try doing it like with like a roast.
That's cool.
I'm trying to think what would be the best cut to use in that case. Maybe like a chuck or an eye round or something like that.
Yeah, that would probably work too. And I also want to try doing it in chunks instead. So it's more like those, like have you ever seen like the Jack Links chunks?
Yeah, I've seen those.
How big are those? They're not like bite-sized chunks, right? They're like
they go usually from like bite-sized, maybe a little bigger that you might have to break apart.
I think for bite-sized.
Yeah, for the most part, they're usually like bite-sized. Some of them, like I said, you might want to bite in half.
Or they're stuck together.
I haven't made any jerky in a long time. I should do that again. Last time I did it was with venison that my dad had.
Now I'm considering. I also found instructions on the web for dehydrating ground meat and chicken. So I might try that.
What do you mean ground meat? You would dehydrate just a.
What
do you get out of that? I don't.
What you do is you cook the ground meat, the ground beef. And you want to, the instructions say to use like a lean, like a 90-10 or something like that with very little fat. And then you drain the fat and you actually rinse it to get all the fat off of it. Okay, and then you would probably kind of pat it dry, like maybe on a paper towel or something. And then when you load it in the dehydrator on the racks, you would put like some parchment or maybe some wax paper down so it doesn't fall through the rack. All right. And then you dehydrate it and basically get these little hamburger rocks, essentially, that you can rehydrate later.
Where would you put these?
You can really put them anywhere because there's no moisture in them, so you can just put them in the cabinet and use it like for like prepping, you know, like prepping for a snowstorm or something, you know, or something just to have on hand so that you can either rehydrate it and just throw your spices in and like already have a real quick like taco meat or something or chili. Actually, I also, also found instructions on how to do that with chili as well. So then you basically just rehydrate the chili and have chili in. I guess you can take it with you camping if you wanted to. But
jeez, you're like making like MREs.
Not exactly. Well, MREs are usually canned, you know, retort patches, but they do have the dehydrated LRPs. But essentially, yes, like an emergency food supply. Chicken with that. I think it would work real well with chicken, and then you can just basically rehydrate it and just throw some, you know, warm it. Well, since you probably rehydrate it with either like a maybe some chicken stock or just boiling water, and then you can just throw in some sauce or something and have something real quick. And it's not gourmet, you know, but it, you know, it's more like keep, you know, because for long term food storage.
No, I gotcha.
I'm not gonna go to the point where like I know I was talking to Tracy and he actually has a freeze dryer. I don't know if I'm gonna go to that level. You can also make like a fruit leather in it in the dehydrating mode. The dehydrating mode is probably gonna be one I use more than some of the other things. I was gonna do a chicken on a rotisserie, but I couldn't find the rod that came with it, so I had to order a new one. Luckily, it wasn't that expensive; it was like $8, you know. But then wound up that the chicken I bought to do that with is probably a little too heavy. You probably only want to do, like, if you're doing a rotisserie in this kind of an air fryer, then you probably want to do like maybe between 2 and 4 pounds for the chicken. So you don't want it to be a huge chicken. The one I have is probably about 8.
Holy crap, you found an 8-pound chicken?
Yeah, actually, well,
where the hell maybe, did you find maybe, an 8-pound chicken?
Maybe not 8, but it's probably more it's probably around 7.
You get typically 2 to 4, and then those are what the broiler fryers, and then the bigger ones are like in the 4 to 6 pound range.
Yeah. It's just a little too heavy. So it might only be a 6-pounder, I don't know. I'm not in my freezer. I stuck it in my freezer, so but I need to get some smaller ones, or maybe get a couple hens and try those, the Cornish hens.
Yeah, don't make the mistake I did and get an old hen. They sound kind of cheap. They're good for soup, but not good for, like, roasting. I tried it. I'm like, oh, this tastes terrible. I'm like, so what'd you get? I said, I got a hen. He's like, no, you didn't even get that. That was many years ago. I learned my lesson.
I did try some of those, it was Farm Fresh, supposed to be deep fried mushrooms, but I air fried them. They worked out pretty well.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that something from the Wolf Pit?
Battered mushrooms, basically, is what they are.
Oh.
Normally you would stick them in oil or bake them in the oven. I just did them in the air fryer about 20 minutes at 400, so. And don't load the basket up too. See, I have a rotating basket, which I like and I don't like at the same time. I like it because it does a really good job for things like fries and stuff like that, because it tumbles the food in there as it's cooking. So it basically keeps the things from sticking together. Okay, but after it's done, taking it out, it has a little like little handle thing that you can basically take it out, but then you have to kind of grab one end of it and then open the lid on the other end, and of course the damn thing's hot, so you have to make sure you have a hot pad. So that part's actually not too bad, but afterwards, after you're done eating and you go to wash the thing out, the crumbs get stuck inside of it, and cleaning all the crumbs out is a little bit of a pain. Yeah, it's a first world problem, but not the most easy to clean. But Yep, I like it. I've been using it a lot. I made ham salad again this week, too. Using my KitchenAid meat grinder.
Nice.
Yeah, it took me 20 years to buy the first attachment for my mixer. But that design's been around for so long that I can probably, 20 years from now, still buy attachments for it.
They make some pretty good stuff.
Yep, I want to get the slicer attachment.
You slice your eye out.
No. They have a spiralizer, which I'm not sure if I want that or not. So I do like to spiralize like zucchini and stuff. So I use that and place like pasta.
I have that actually, and it's like it's great. We use it a lot.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What do you do with it? Just like zucchini and squash.
We've done zucchinis. I've done carrots. I've done sweet potatoes.
As I say, sweet potatoes would work real well.
You can actually make a good pad thai out of sweet potato noodles.
That does sound good.
I'm trying to think what else. I think Steph might have done like apples with the girls. With it,
that would work.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't. I mean, there's so many little attachments. So you want little fine strands. You want some bigger ones. You want ribbons. You can do all of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long do you cook the sweet potato noodles for the pad thai?
It's not very long. It's not as long as like if when
couple
you think
minutes,
about
right?
baking like a sweet potato or something like that. It takes quite a while.
Right. Right.
But this goes, it's maybe in there, you know, depending on how firm you want them to be, like 5 to 10 minutes, you know, depending on how, you want a pretty hot, you know,
that,
like wok or something like that.
Oh, so you stir fry them, bake them, or?
That was stir frying them,
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, the zucchini, like I bought the pre-made zucchini ones. That's a couple minutes, you know. So basically, heat up a pan and basically just toss it around in the oil until they're warm. But yeah, the zucchini ones are pretty good for a pretty good replacement for pasta. My wife doesn't care for it as much, but because I'm trying to cut out pasta and eat something a little bit better for me.
So what do you do with the apple? You just eat it raw like that, or do you do something with it?
I don't remember what they did with it. It was something that she was doing with the girls.
So you probably could have flash fry those.
That sounds
good. Apples?
Apples.
Sure, why not?
No, they went in something. I'm trying to. I don't remember. I don't remember what it was though.
Maybe like a kind of like a Waldorf salad almost, but with apples.
I think it was some kind of dessert thing.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. Boston?
Yep, I'm in Boston. I'm in Boston. For this week and next week, and then I'm in Austin, Texas. And then I'll be back. Then I'll be back in Boston. I'll be in Dallas. I'll be all over the place. I think I'm going to Denver too. What's that?
Say hi when you're in Dallas.
Yeah, I will try to reach out. It's a pretty tight week that week with where I'm supposed to be. I can't really talk about it.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask. You know, North Dallas, South Dallas.
I really don't know. I really don't know just yet. Yeah.
Okay.
But I will reach out when it gets closer to that time. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get maybe a sales guy since the Eagles happen to be playing the Cowboys on the 20th and I'm supposed to be there on the 21st. Go. I'm like, maybe I can get one of the sales guys to foot the bill for the tickets.
The company might even have a box already.
Wait a minute. Pivotal's under Dell. Dell's down there, aren't they? Right?
Yep.
Pivotal's got to have a box at the freaking Cowboys then, right?
They could.
You asking us? We have no idea. You work for them, right?
I have no idea. I have no idea when it comes to that kind of stuff. And
if they did, it'd probably be the Zsa Zsa one with all the food and stuff in it.
I'm just kind of spitballing here in my head. I gotta figure this out now.
See, just like, I don't know if we have that kind of stuff at all in our company. Probably not.
Not for you, Joel. Not for you. It's when they wine and dine the potential customers. They'll send you to the local minor league game as a team building.
Hey! The Columbus Clippers are in the championship, so.
Well, there you go. But too bad your company's out of Florida, so.
No, it's actually, like they're, SOL. They're actually out of Virginia, but we have a headquarters in Florida, so.
Where out of where? Oh, Northern Virginia?
Reston, actually. Right next to the town center. If you're at Reston Town Center, you can actually see the our building from the town center. You see that core, that orange color on the pixel? I don't know if I'd like that or not.
I might have to do and get like a Flyers logo airbrushed onto it or something like that.
There you go.
Reston is Northern Virginia. It's like right next door to Washington on the west side. Yep. Actually, that's
Dallas.
So that's like not that far from where my corporate headquarters are.
Tyson's. Yeah, that's like their tech quarter out there.
Yeah.
Fairfax, Tyson's Corner, so on and so forth. All DC suburbs. Actually, I saw if the pictures I saw were right on the Pixel 4 XL, they have a blue one. I think that's the one I'm going to go with. Either the blue or the white, anything but black. Because everybody gets black phones.
We got to start wrapping this up.
Yep. It's getting, it's 10 o'clock. Dan's turning into pumpkin and has to wake up at 5 in the morning.
It's almost my bedtime.
What time Friday, Joe, for the Linux Lugcast?
8 Central, 9 Eastern. LinuxLugcast.com.
I should be there.
That's going to be closer to 9:30 your time. I mean, we usually all start trying to get on there about 8:15, but we don't start until a little bit later.
And it's all right here, same mumble server.
Yep.
So you're good to go.
Yep, just a different channel. Send out 5150. He was a good guy.
You want to hear a funny story, Joe? Not so funny, Joe. It's not so funny.
I'm right. Willing to listen.
So, like, Sunday before Labor Day, right? That evening, I'm like making dinner, and all of a sudden, I'm like, "Damn, feels like somebody punched me in the ass. It hurt really bad."
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, "Oh." And my wife's like, "You probably pulled something or whatever." So, you know, the next day, it like went away. And then it came back like last week.
Hemorrhoid?
And it's like, I'm like, "Oh man." It came back on, it was Tuesday of last week. And it felt like I said, it felt like somebody just like hauled off and just like, boom, right in the butt. Like right in my ass. It hurts.
Are you going to say that you have arthritis of the coccyx?
No. So I thought I had like one of those cysts or whatever it is. We thought that's what it might be, right? And so I went to the doctor and I had to get some tests, you know, the fun tests a little bit.
The camera and the
No, finger. No, no, no. We didn't go that far yet. But just check me out. She's like, there's nothing there. You don't have any symptoms of anything. There's nothing there. It could be one of those cysts. And I was like not feeling good and stuff. So she said, if it is, let's try this course. So long story short, we finally figured out what it is, right? So there is a muscle, I forget what it's called, that's down there. And if you strain it, like that tendon in there, it presents itself exactly like I feel it. And I figured out what I did. Like I changed my workout routine right after I got back from a holiday, like my vacations. So I've tried to do an incline bench press on my bench press my weight bench I have here. And you know, like how when you do a proper incline bench press on a proper incline bench, that it's almost just like how you start a regular bench press is typically almost right above where you're supposed to go, right? Not while I was doing them. I had to reach back behind my head a little bit and pull it forward and then do it and then get it back there. And turns out because I was doing that, I was straining that muscle in a weird way down there like I've never used it before. And boy, does it freaking hurt. So case, good thing to learn. Don't fuck around, man. Proper form and don't fuck around. You're gonna end up feeling like you got punched in the ass.
That's like a head nun press.
Just be mindful of what you're shoving up there, Dan.
Yeah, there no, I'm like, I thought this was kind of risky doing what I was doing, and I'm like, I gotta stop that exercise unless I go to the Y and do it there on a proper bench.
That's like me. I went on the treadmill yesterday for the first time in a while. Usually I just do the arc trainer, which is a lot lower impact, but my knees have been killing me all day today because I'm a big dude. So trying to get, I am losing weight. So that's a good thing, but
yeah, you gotta be careful. Watch form, gotta stretch.
Don't overdo it. Contemplating trying to do, Dan might have heard of it. Have you ever heard of the hot chocolate 5K?
No.
I'm allergic to chocolate, so I can't
be part of that. No, they actually have a 5 and a 15K, which I'd never do the 15. But I don't know whether it raises money, because it's like $45 entry fee. I'm trying to think about possibly doing that. Then at the end, do you get like hot chocolate and chocolate and a hoodie and things, you know, that kind of swag, you know?
Is that something that's done local to where you are, or is it done across the country?
It's another one like the Color Run where they do it across the country, and Columbus is just one of the spots. They're doing it down the Arena District, so they probably do either something similar there, but this one's called the Hot Chocolate Run. So
you should do it, man.
I don't know. I probably could. It'd probably take me about my current pace would probably take me about an hour because I'm not running very fast if at all when I'm on the treadmill.
I'll tell you what, an hour faster than you'd do it if you didn't do it.
This is true.
There you go, man.
This is true. So, but I need to do more treadmill then, and go to their website and I at least know the course, so I can probably go down some weekend and kind of run a faux course.
Do it.
Just so that I know where it's at, but I don't know. Running I'm not really into that much, but I have a friend that she's done it before, and if she signs up, I probably will.
All right, I'm gonna pay out. It's not that far.
5K is not really all that far anyway. I mean, in my normal half hour and treadmill, I already go about a mile and a half, so you know, I could probably. I just need to start.
I think it's 3.25.
3.1.
3.1
is 5K.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I got to play us out. Here are your promos. Thank you, everybody. Have a safe trip back, man. Fry. Stay cool down there in Texas, Joe. And if you can, please show up on Linux Learncast Friday night. 9 Central. 8 Central. 9 Eastern. Probably take a little while to get things hooked up. But there we go. And here are your promos.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
Hi, folks, this is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. But join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
There we go.
I put a link in there for that race.
Yeah, I saw it. I posted back. The closest one to me looks like Charlotte or Philadelphia, depending on how traffic is. That's way, which one it would be.
They don't have one in DC.
No, I didn't see DC wasn't listed. It was tough looking through that list because it's just by city, and I'm like,
I know
by state.
Anyway, that looks like a fun run, and you get a treat at the end. So
there you go.
Because who doesn't like hot chocolate, man? I love hot chocolate.
When is it? Wait, I didn't...
November 17th in Columbus.
Yeah. Do it. I recommend doing
$45.
You probably get a t-shirt at the very least out of it, too.
They got hoodies, actually.
Oh, there you go. $45 for a hoodie and then, you know, having a good time and I've done a couple of runs and I've always found them to be a lot of fun. I'm like, why don't I do this more often? And I should. I should get my ass back into doing runs like that. Cause I'm like, there are times when I'm running here and they're having a run here while I'm running. And I'm like, well, why the hell didn't I know really pay attention to that?
You'd probably dig the color run. Have you ever seen that one?
No, it's a color run.
Basically, there you go through state. Like, you start off with a stark white t-shirt, and they have these stations where they throw these powdered colors at you.
Oh, okay, there we go. I see the... I'm trying to see where... I don't see it listed anywhere in Virginia. I would assume it would probably be
They didn't go to Columbus this year.
Baltimore looks like a
Mexico. That's not too bad. I'm surprised they don't have more down there with the military base and all that.
They have a bunch of different kinds, but not this stuff. Not a lot of this.
But at least this looks like it's fun, and I think the majority of people that go in, like either Color Run or the Hot Chocolate thing, they're not necessarily competitive. They're just doing it to do it, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. There's a lot of run. There's probably like a lot of run clubs in your area.
I'm sure there is. Like, I have a friend. She's actually a marathoner, and there's no way I would do a marathon.
You never know. This could be a turning point for you, Joel. You can sign up for this. You get addicted to it. Next thing you know, you're running marathons. So it happened to my daughter.
I like the color. I like at least the hoodie looks cool. It's like a navy blue with a like a light. The men get one with a light blue accents, and the women get one with like a pink accent.
Yeah. Hey, stop the recording, Joe. I gotta get this.
Out. Stop the recording.
With the like, it sounded like there was a little bit of urgency. When you said, hey, Dan, like you were going to say, oh, I got to jump out of here because I got a work emergency or something.
Nope, not yet.
Well, good. That I was, hope it
that
doesn't
was, that was yesterday.
I might have to bail.
Oh, that sucks.
We'll see.
Oh, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I got tomorrow pizza, and Friday pizza. Off.
What? Where are you going?
I gotta take a. I was gonna say nowhere, but no, I gotta take the one car over to get fixed. The one with the check engine light on. So I'm thinking tomorrow's probably my car day. Friday might be the day I clean out my office. So and just straighten things up.
Do you already know what's wrong with the car or?
Nah, it's just check engine light.
So you just took these 2 days off just for the heck of it, and now you have something to do.
Yeah, pretty much, because my schedule was pretty clear anyway for work, and since I'm starting the new position on Monday, so.
That's cool.
Excited for the new position.
Anything different is good.
Well, is it safe to talk about it on the show?
I'd rather not.
Oh, okay. Well, because I was going to ask you a couple of things, so I was just curious about.
I was just going to ask if there would be less traveling to Florida for salad tossing.
Okay.
We probably go down there at least once or twice a year from the looks of it for team meetings, I think.
Well, what I was curious about is there any like bleed over for you? That like when you go to the new position, are you still like do you still have like a span of time where they may need to call you back for the other stuff?
I'm highly doubting it. That usually doesn't happen with professional services too much unless something came back and the other guys couldn't figure it out. But really the only thing I had outstanding is the last server migration I did. The client didn't want to do part of the migration until after a certain point in the year. So we moved it up to like beginning of October timeframe, I think. And that's going to have to be reallocated, rescheduled, but everything else was done already, so it worked out that for the last couple months I've been working with the transition team anyway, so I didn't have a whole lot of stuff that was scheduled already.
Yeah, his access will probably be revoked 10 minutes before he moves over to the new position.
Unfortunately, none of that's actually really going to change all that much, because I had a lot of logins and stuff created for the with the transition team, and a lot of those will still should still work. The only difference is, see, transition team is the ones that actually walk the client through the migration and actually sets the systems up in a cloud. My team pretty much just takes care of them once they've transitioned. I start teaching myself PowerShell too.
Oh, I'm not a big fan of PowerShell.
Yeah, but we got Windows boxes we got to take care of, so.
Didn't they open source PowerShell?
Yeah, I know lots
might have,
of it.
I'm not sure.
Lots of it, I believe they have. I don't know if the entire thing's open source.
But you this can is learn. Actually good show material, because we got a... I want to talk about Stephen Von Nichols' article on Microsoft Linux.
Oh, okay, cool.
Plus, they're going to have a Linux conference too.
Hey, Pat.
What's happening, man?
Jolay. And we got Dan Fedor, Dan Oldell. And Dan, BFG. Is that for, like, big freaking gun? Is that what BFG is?
That used to be what a BFG was. I don't know why I named it BFG. I guess it was back then, it was the big freaking gun of the computers here. That was a long time ago when it was the big freaking gun.
And Dan needs another big freaking gun.
What?
Dan could use another few terabytes of storage too, probably.
Look at these. I got a double.
8 terabyte drives are on sale for $129 at Costco.
That's attractive.
Eight terabyte externals.
Si, senor.
I guess we should probably get the show going, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on one sec.
That could be good.
Yeah, because the other show that pays me, you know, because I'm getting those door bucks.
Pays you?
Yeah. With the door bucks.
Is that like cryptocurrency?
Oh, don't bring that up again.
It's more like he just fires off a board to him every once in a while.
So let me get this straight. Once you have completed a single door coin, a door buck, then he's going to make a ride down to your place and personally give you one hug for every buck you have, right?
That would make it all worthwhile. Unless it was a Jolly coin, I got a Jolly.
What do you get for a Jolly coin?
What would you do for a clock?
All right. One second, I just want to bring something up.
No, you got to do it now.
Am I logged in? Oh, yes, I am. Good, 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 good. Everything should be running. All right. This is show 826. All day today?
They said it wouldn't last.
All right.
Man, I've been on the show for a couple of years now.
Time flies when you're having a ball.
Still the new guy.
Right?
Except the new guy, yeah. I think you've been on more shows than Peggy has now.
Peggy has now.
Possible.
You won.
Ben Peggy lied. He said he was going to try and be on the show tonight.